afternoon. I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect it is 2:40 p.m. on Monday, February 28th, 2022. Present today are Representative LeBon, Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Foster, Representative Josephson, and myself, Co-Chair Merrick. This afternoon, we will take public testimony and consider amendments to House Bills 64 and 30, which were due to my office by Saturday at 6 p.m. First up is House Bill 64, Fishery Development Association Assessments, by Representative Stutes and his staff, Fate Putnam. The committee first heard this bill February 2nd. Mr. Putnam, if you'd come to the table and briefly reintroduce your bill, please.
Thank you, Co-Chair Merrick and Co-Chair Foster and members of the House Finance Committee. Again, my name is Fate Putman. I am here to talk to you about House Bill 64. Just a quick overview for you. Unfortunately, Speaker Stutes will not be able to join us here today, but this bill establishes the Regional Fisheries Associations, or RAFTAs, to allow for the development of fisheries management assessments in order to support the growth of new and developing fisheries. And the RAFTA fisheries are prospective fisheries within geographic regions of the state not currently regulated by the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. And in the case of new and developing fisheries, the funding is there to help these fisheries get started, to conduct surveys and assessments so Fish and Game can open the fisheries. And the last point I'd like to make is that 64 creates a mechanism to fund the management and new development of fisheries and allows for the creation of regional fishery development associations, which are nonprofit organizations that represent the fishery stakeholders. These development associations, and I'll keep reading, are associated with, may elect to levy upon themselves an assessment that would help pay for those studies. And that's basically how the bill works. Welcome. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those. Better take public testimony as you see fit.
Thank you. Let the record reflect. At 2:42 p.m., we were joined by Representative Rasmussen. Are there questions from the committee before public testimony? Seeing none, we'll open public testimony. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify on House Bill 64? Seeing none, we'll move online. Is there anyone online? Brief at ease. House Finance back on the record. We're in public testimony. I see no one online, so therefore I will close public testimony. Brief at ease. Finance back on the record. We will reopen public testimony. Jerry McCoons, please state your name and affiliation and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jerry McCoon. I represent Cordova District Fishermen United. We work with the representative to put a bill together that would finance new fisheries because, you know, in the budget crisis nowadays, Fish and Game doesn't have the money to address every new fishery you may want to have. So this is one way we figured, like the divers do down here in Southeast, that we'd be able to finance some of these fisheries we're looking at in Cordova for wintertime fisheries, sea cucumbers, crab fishery, a new herring fishery maybe down by the Cape Suckling, and things like that. We're exploring to see if we can get, you know, work in the winter, get fishermen going, and be able to do some of these fisheries. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you very much. Are there questions? Seeing none, we will move to Phil Doherty from Ketchikan. If you could state your name, affiliation, and begin your testimony.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Phil Doherty, Ketchikan, Alaska, and I'm the executive director of the Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries Association. And right now we were the first and only fishing association that was set up that would be such as under HB 64. We've been working along our own legislative rules for the last, since 1998. They generated the funds to allow the dive fisheries in Southeast Alaska to help pay for the state of Alaska for their management of the three species. We harvest sea cucumbers, sea urchins, and gooey duck clams. And the monies generated from the fisheries pays the Fish and Game Department, as I said, both for the management and assessment of those three fisheries. We now have those fisheries are often in the neighborhood, the three fisheries combined, at a vessel value of $15 million. And again, the reason, I think, is obvious why we got started. Back in those days, the department did not have the funds to do the assessment and the management of those three dive fisheries. But with the putting together of Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries Association, it's worked very well. Obviously, we have ongoing fisheries. We're fishing right now this winter and employing 70 to 100 divers and crew members and boats and companies. And so it's worked well. And that's basically all I have to say. We are in favor of, we are in support of this bill. And since I guess I have a little bit of experience as to how it all goes together, I'll just stay online. And if there's any questions, I'd be happy to try and answer them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Doherty. Are there questions? Seeing none, it looks like our final testifier is in the Homer LIO, Wes Humbert. If you could state your name, affiliation, and begin your testimony.
Yeah, my name's Wes Humbert, and I've been a resident of Alaska since 1971, a commercial fisherman in all different species of fisheries. And I can see the point they got here, but I have been really riding the horse here about, I just found out about this bill, but I'm a member of the Cook Inlet Drift Association, and we also have Cook Inlet Aquaculture here in Cook Inlet. And I don't know if you people have heard that they take a 2% tax from us fishermen, and we do not get one stinking thing out of that to 1,095 permit holders in Upper Cook Inlet. So if this does pass, I would hope that you'd make sure that that fishery that's being taxed gets some kind of recovery from that. And I keep hearing all these things about trying to collect money and stuff, and I, just for an example, here's another avenue maybe we could take. I have friends that fish in Bristol Bay, Cook Inlet, and different areas of the state. One of my friends made $300,000 in Bristol Bay last year as a drift fisherman. Why don't we go back and enhance the income tax like we used to have in this state many, many years ago and use some of that money to give it to the department so the department can go out and do their job? I used to work for the Department of Fish and Game. I was an ABO on a research vessel. And all the time we had no money. Well, if the state doesn't have money, please figure out a way to get some money without taxing the people when they don't get anything back from it. We don't get a stinking thing up in the Upper Inlet for the 2% tax that we pay into Cook Inlet Aquaculture. And it scares fishermen to tax 2 cents or 2.5% or 2% on top of it. And I really think an income tax would work. I know a lot of people are against it. I'm not for taxes either. But I remember back in the late 60s, I forgot to file my income tax. I sent to Alaska to get my drift permit to go back and fish in Cook Inlet. You know what they told me? You can't come back and fish, Wes. I says, why? You didn't pay your taxes. So people that come up here and generate revenue from these different fisheries in this state of Alaska need to start paying something. And this bill, I see where it could work for certain fisheries, but we need to start collecting money from these people that make 90% of their living in Alaska and then leave and laugh at us when they go down the street there. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Humbert. Are there questions? Seeing none, is there anyone else in the room or online wishing to testify?
Madam Chair.
With that, I'll close public testimony.
Okay.
I would like the record to reflect at 2:45 p.m. we were joined by Representative Johnson. Mr. Putnam.
Pardon me, Madam Chair. I do have one person online, McKenna O'Toole, but he's here for questions, not necessarily to testify. If he is not online, then I apologize. Okay.
And let the record reflect, at 2:51 p.m., we were joined by Representatives Wool and Thompson. Are there any further questions on House Bill 64? Seeing none, Mr. Co-Chair, do you have a motion? Brief at ease. House Finance back on the record. Mr. Co-Chair, do you have a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 64, version 32-LS0293/I from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note, and authorize legislative legal services to make conforming changes.
Is there an objection? Seeing none, House Bill 64 is moved from committee. With that, we'll take a brief at ease. House Finance back on the record. We're now considering House Bill 30, Workers' Comp, Death, Permanent Partial Impairment by Representative Josephson and his staff, Elise Sorenberg. The committee last heard this bill on February 2nd. Representative Josephson, if you'd like to briefly review your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Andy Josephson, House District 17. With me is Elise Sorenberg, my staff. House Bill 30, which is before you, is a new version of a bill which, by coincidence, had the same number in the 31st legislature. It is almost identical to the version that passed the House in 2020, and I can explain the bill very, very quickly. House Bill 30 does three major things. First, it updates the permanent partial impairment rates for the whole body to reflect inflation. These haven't been addressed since 2000. Second, it updates a death benefit for non-nuclear family dependents that hasn't been updated in over 50 years and adjusts two other death benefit amounts for inflation. It does not change how death benefits are calculated in general, since this calculation in Alaska is tied to the average weekly wage. Third, it provides, subject to an amendment that will entertain, the committee will entertain, it provides employees notice about death benefits, specifically about the lack of benefits for single workers. The final thing HB 30 does is it allows dependent children who were orphaned because their single parent died in the job to receive death benefits for an additional 5 years following their 19th birthday. That was already true, but this expands the group of 19-year-olds that would get a death benefit.
Thank you. Let the record reflect, at 2:54 p.m., we were joined by Representative Edgman. Are there questions on House Bill 30 before we go to public testimony? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just was reminded of something by looking at my notes. Last time when you presented, you talked about the kind of a grand bargain, a give and take between employers and employees. Would you just go over that again? I'm trying to remember why I have that in my notes.
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Johnson, the essence of it is that there would be a lot of tort actions, T-O-R-T, that's personal injury actions, if there wasn't a workers' comp system. People who were injured at work would be suing their employers a lot. And now they can't. They can under the workers' comp statute if they're deprived of benefits, and that's why we have workers' comp cases. But it's all designed to be a win-win. The win for the employer is it's insurable. The costs are sort of forecast for them. They know what they're getting into. They won't be sued directly and personally. So the employers get that win. The employee gets a win in that they're entitled to, if they can prove that they've been injured and that it happened at work, they're entitled to maintenance, rehabilitation, et cetera. So both sides, that's why it's called the grand bargain.
Thank you. Further questions? I see none. With that, we will open public testimony. First in the room, we have Kevin Smith. Mr. Smith, if you could come to the table, put your name on the record, your affiliation, and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Kevin Smith with the Alaska Municipal League Joint Insurance Association. I'm Kevin Smith, the Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal League Joint Insurance Association. Now, Representative Thompson, can you hear me?
Much better. Thank you.
Good to see you guys. I'm here to testify on HB 30. There's a couple of problems that I have with the bill, and Representative LeBond's amendment takes care of most of those problems. I personally think that the PPI has not been, this is the permanent partial impairment, has not been updated long enough that, you know, I don't have a problem with having to pay a little bit more for that. But the other tweaks to the law, I think we're not ready for. And so I would encourage you to adopt Rep. LeBond's amendment, which I assume will be proposed somewhere along the line here today. And otherwise, I would ask you to not support the bill. I've presented a letter as of February 1 or February 2, the last meeting you had, that kind of outlines the position. I'll entertain any questions that you might have.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. When you say we are not ready for that kind of a change, can you elaborate as to who's we and what kind of change are you talking about?
Sure. I would say that I'm not ready for that kind of change. The members of the Municipal League's Joint Insurance Association, the 158 cities, schools, and districts, and school districts are not ready for that kind of a change. It's, as Representative Josephson indicated earlier, these things can be figured out ahead of time and actuarially predicted, but that hasn't been done for this bill for us. So, you know, I haven't collected money already ahead of time for the proposed changes to the law.
Thank you.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you, through the chair. It's Mr. Smith, correct?
It is, Mr. Josephson.
Several times you've said that kind of change. What are you referring to?
Increased costs, basically. Increased costs.
Yes, follow up?
But in your letter, at this point, the bill's main feature is updating the PPI that is 22 years old. And in your letter, you've written, the amounts paid for PPI have not changed in many years, and it is appropriate for them to be updated.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree that that's fundamentally, if the amendment in question is adopted, that that's fundamentally all this bill does?
No, I wouldn't agree with that, Representative Josephson. It also puts a burden on employers to notify folks of the changes that are, you know, that you're proposing with respect to death benefits. And, you know, there's other changes there, too.
And I'll just take note that that's in fact removed. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Thank you, Mr. Smith.
You're welcome.
Representative Wohl.
Thank you, through the co-chair. Are you saying that if the amendment is adopted, that that will change your feeling and you will support the bill? Is that the only problem you have? Notification and I think it's more notification than effective date, but is that specifically what the issue is, or is there another issue? You say costs, but that's kind of a general term.
The amendment is essentially, the proposed amendment, once it's a proposed, would pretty much take care of my concerns with the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? Seeing none, Mr. Smith, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
And next we will move online. We have Charles Collins, Director of Workers' Comp. Mr. Collins, are you testifying or here for questions?
Through the chair, this is Charles Collins, Director of Workers' Compensation. I was just standing by in case they had questions for me.
Great, thank you. Are there questions? Seeing none, our next testifier is Eric Croft in Anchorage. If you could state your name, affiliation, and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. My name is Eric Croft. I'm representing myself and speaking in favor of the bill. In my past, I served on House Finance for about 8 years, and I wanted to compliment you on how efficiently you're running the meeting, and starting it within 10 minutes of when you said was virtually unheard of in my day. So fabulous. Nicely
Thank
done.
You.
And it made me feel as though I was listening to some other House Finance, but we still have a Foster there, and that makes me feel better.
Me too.
This is appropriate, particularly after the amendment, though I think the notice provisions were appropriate before, but addressing it after the amendment that you're considering. This hasn't been increased, as has been said, since 2000. This benefit is the benefit for workers who go back to work. The benefit for workers who don't go back to work, who are disabled and get a disability benefit, is indexed to the average weekly wage. So it primarily rises every once in a while, falls, but is indexed to and rises with wage increases. But this is for workers who face a medical challenge, a work-related medical challenge, recover, and go back to work. In my law office here, we do represent injured workers, and that's part of the reason I'm interested enough to testify before you today, is we see you rate the whole body, and then you say, what's the loss of the appendage or whatever happened to you? I had a fabulous paralegal who unfortunately died of cancer about 2 years ago. It was an eye cancer, and she lost her eye first. She could go back to work. She was a fabulous paralegal. She was better with one eye than most lawyers or paralegals with two, and it really didn't affect her earning capacity. But it obviously losing an eye affects you. It affects your life. It affects driving. It affects lots of other things. And so this is the benefit primarily for those injured workers who go back to work, who are not getting disability, who are not claiming disability. And that's what most of us want them to do, want them to return to work. And so indexing this for inflation or increasing it for inflation is appropriate. I testified this morning before APOC, on whether they index for inflation the campaign limits that have not been increased in 15 years since 2006. And I would just suggest this is as important if you're in that small category of injured workers, and it hasn't been increased in over 20. So thank you for the efficient way you run the meeting, and I appreciate Representative Josephson for introducing the bill, and I'll be available for any questions.
Thank you. I appreciate those kind words. Are there questions for Mr. Croft? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Looks like our final testimony testifier is Kim Hayes with the AFL-CIO in Anchorage. Ms. Hayes, if you could state your name, affiliation, and begin your testimony.
Thank you to the co-chairs and members of House Finance for taking public testimony today. My name is Kim Hayes, and I am calling in on behalf of the Alaska AFL-CIO. We're an organization that represents more than 50,000 union members across the state, and we work on behalf of all working people, ensuring that rights are protected and that Alaskans have dignity on the job. We are on the record in support of HB 30, and you will find our letter of support in the bill packet, so I'll try to keep my comments brief. HB 30 does just what we work toward, which is providing dignity for work done for those injured or killed on the job. Our workplaces here in Alaska are dangerous. Working people in our state are proud of that work, even in the face of danger. It's crucial that the state of Alaska and our employers honor that work and commitment. One way we do that is through PPI benefits. When a working person is injured on the job and they suffer a permanent injury that has a altering, it alters their life and their ability to work in the job they were working in, and it alters their way that they live their life. Unfortunately, it has been 22 years since we've increased the PPI rate. A lot has changed in 22 years, the price of bread, housing prices, everything. So why has PPI not changed? It seems only fair to adjust this locally outdated benefit. Alaska currently ranks among the states with the lowest PPI benefit, so we should correct that. PPI exists to honor the sacrifice of a worker who's injured on the job. Increasing the rate tells Alaska's workers that we honor and value them, and that we know how hard it can be to find work after a life-changing injury. It also provides a safety net for those workers as they begin searching for new work and adjusting their new reality. This bill also increases the funeral expenses for those killed on the job. We know how expensive funeral services can be, and it is paramount for families of Alaskans killed at work to not have to worry about those expenses. This increase is just a show of respect for those grieving families. Our workers' compensation system, which includes PPI and death benefits, is part of the grand bargain that Rep. Johnson and Rep. Josephson were just talking about that we have with working people. For the dedication to building Alaska and keeping it running, our state agrees to compensate those workers for injuries, illnesses, and sometimes, and unfortunately, death. So we just hope that you choose to honor that bargain by updating these very outdated benefits. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Ms. Hayes. Any questions? Seeing none, is there anyone else in the room or online wishing to testify? Seeing none, I will close public testimony. There is one amendment before the committee, which was distributed to the committee yesterday. Amendment number one by Representative LeBon. Representative LeBon, do you have a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move amendment number one.
I'll object for purpose of discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In summary, this amendment proposes to do three things. It's going to remove Section 1, remove Section 3, and change the effective date. Walking through these changes, first, Section 1, this section had created a requirement for employers to notify employees at the time of hire regarding types of compensation available in the event of a work-related death. Notably regarding lack of availability for death benefits for a single childless worker. Madam Chair, this presents an undue burden on employers, and it likely creates more questions than answers. In an unfortunate event that an employee needs program benefits, specific information pertinent to their situation would be available at that time. Moving on to Section 3, Section 3 had added a requirement for employers to provide notification to a personal representative regarding a list of legal counsel and grief counselors. Madam Chair, this section is a problem as employers are prohibited from directing medical care and similarly should not be held responsible for providing guidance on legal counsel or grief counselors. Additionally, the personal representatives can also be unknown for a period of time. In a situation where the personal representative is unknown, this adds more burden on employers to have to chase after folks on the list if the personal representative is not immediately available. The employer would have no way of knowing the standing relationship with the employee's spouse or other family members. Generally, employees providing an emergency contact, that person needs to be notified, of course, and that is the employer who should have that right and obligation to get in touch with that individual. And then lastly, the effective date is changed from January 1st, 2022 to January 1st, 2023. So in summary, Madam Chair, that is the amendment.
Is there discussion on Amendment 1? Seeing none, I will remove my objection. Is there further objection? Seeing none, Amendment number 1 is adopted. There are no other amendments. Is there any discussion on House Bill 30? Seeing none, Mr. Co-Chair, do you have a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 30, version 32-LS0238/A from committee as amended, as amended with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note, and authorize legislative legal services to make conforming changes.
Is there an objection? Seeing none, House Bill 30 is moved from committee. This concludes this afternoon's agenda. Our next meeting tomorrow, Tuesday, March 1st at 1:30, we will begin budget subcommittee closeout reports. With that, at 3:11 p.m., we are adjourned. Thank you.